welcome back to the Next Big Thing podcast. I'm your host, Sam Ogborn. Before diving into today's episode, I just want to talk about one thing, and that is the fact that I could not be happier with the first week of the Next Big Thing podcast launch. In the last week, we ranked number 13 on the marketing podcast for Apple Podcasts specifically in the United States, which is absolutely incredible. I would have never imagined this in a million years. Not only that, but we had listeners from 13 countries in the last week. For those of you out there who have downloaded our episodes and provided constructive feedback or even written a review in the Apple Podcast Store, I can't thank you enough. It means the world to us. Stay tuned to the end of this podcast where I talk about a little treat giveaway. Today's podcast guests are also doing something special for the Next Big Thing listeners. It's not sponsored, by the way, but stay tuned to the end of the episode where I give you all the details. So on that note, let's get into our podcast guests for today. You guys know me by now. I love to slide into people's DMs. Apparently, that is my favorite new business tactic. And Alaya T is no different. When I came across Alaya T on Instagram and I did a little bit more research on the brand, I knew that they had to be on the Next Big Thing podcast. I remember reaching out to them and sending Smita, who is one of the co-founders, a message, just telling them about how I really loved their branding and I couldn't wait to see more from them. Cut to today, and Smita and Esha, who are the co-founders of Alaya T, are today's podcast guests. I really can't begin to tell you guys how much fun I'm having just sliding into people's Instagram DMs. Like, I bet no one else is thinking about sliding into a brand's DMs late at night, but that is me. I'm pretty sure I sent Smita a message at like 12:30 a.m. Sometimes I just get these like creative thoughts late at night. Maybe someone else listening is exactly like that. Here's what I love about connecting with Smita and Esha. I learned so much about tea during this episode, but what I also love about Smita and Esha is that they are both still working their full-time jobs. So I know there are other people that are listening to this podcast that can relate. You've either considered starting your business while working your full-time job, or you don't think that you can do it because you're working your full-time job. Either way, I think this podcast will definitely dispel how you can't do both at the same time, because Smita and Esha have been able to build this amazing tea brand from the ground up while working full time. And that doesn't mean that it's not a hustle and they're not spending a lot of their time working on the brand. But if they can do it, I'm pretty sure anyone can. So I hope this episode inspires you to think differently about what's possible. So remember to stay tuned to the end of the episode for a few special announcements. And with that said, let's get into the episode. Hey, Smita and Esha, welcome to the Next Big Thing podcast. Let's kick off this episode talking about how the two of you met.
So this is sort of a funny story. Esha and I met almost eight years ago, I think, on a cross-country train journey that we both took from San Francisco to DC. We were part of this inaugural train journey called the Millennial Trains Project. And it's a train journey that is actually modeled after a train journey that happens in India every year, which is called the Jagratha Yatra. And it takes Indian entrepreneurs around India for 10 days on rail. So we were, I was helping to actually recreate this train journey in the US, and Esha was working as a journalist at the time covering the train journey. So we met on this train journey and kept in touch ever since. We both worked in the social impact space. Esha was covering a lot of social impact companies, and I was working for a organization called Ashoka, which is a fund that supports social entrepreneurs at the time. So throughout the years past, we became good friends and kept in touch ever since then.
That's a old school way of meeting, almost very romantic.
Right.
But all jokes aside, I actually really like that story because it's just different and unique. So let's give our listeners a little bit of background as to what Alea Tea is.
Sure. So Alea is a loose leaf tea company. We source biodynamic and organic loose leaf teas directly from India. And we started the company because Esha and I are both Indian and grew up. Esha was born in India. I went to school there when I was a kid and grew up between the United States and India. And like most Asian American households, tea time was this non-negotiable daily ritual at both of our homes. I remember when I was a kid, my mom would have this non-negotiable tea time in the afternoon where we could hang out with her, but we knew no matter what was happening that day, my mom was going to be doing tea time from 4 to 5 p.m. And so, similarly to Esha's family, it was such a central part of the way we grew up. And Esha and I both went to college in the United States and went off to work after college, and went into like a really both of us worked in really fast-paced environments. I was working at the White House for President Obama. Esha was a journalist, and realized that the concept of like an afternoon tea time was pretty non-existent in the corporate world. So initially, we wanted to create some space for an afternoon tea time and bring back this concept of Indian tea time to the United States. The more that we learned about the tea industry and its impacts and intersections with sustainability and climate change, we wanted to start a company that was a more sustainable, fresh option for tea drinkers and bring people into the kind of environmental and social impact space around drinking tea in places that people may not realize before.
Got it. So I think I understand how the two of you met, but when did Alea come up as a potential business opportunity among the two of you?
So I think I remember it was an evening a couple of years ago, and I was living in San Francisco at the time, and Esha had just returned from one of her trips to India. She was covering a she was actually in up in Darjeeling writing and doing some research on a story about the climate change impacts on the tea regions up in Darjeeling. And she just returned from one of her trips, and we were catching up over drinks one evening. And the idea was sort of like formed in and around that evening and that week, where we both connected on this concept of Indian tea time, and I sort of said to her, like, this is something that we should do. We should create a fresher option for people to drink tea that is loose leaf, directly sourced, and give people a better option for drinking tea here in the United States. So after that, that was almost 2 years ago, I think, and we officially launched last August. So it's been almost a year now.
Oh, that's awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Okay, so in full transparency, I am a coffee drinker, but I drink tea occasionally. So can you explain to myself and others why Alea is loose leaf?
I think to educate a story before we go forward for loose leaf is that for me, as a journalist, having covered the industry and having traveled to a lot of these places firsthand, I was really captivated by the stories at the grassroots level. So the name Alea comes from Himalaya, and a lot of the tea estates are either at the base of the Himalayas or they're in the valleys of the Himalayas. And so that was the inspiration. And if you go to these places and you meet the farmers and you see the way that they're growing the produce, in this case tea, it's really inspiring. And as somebody who had been writing about environmental issues and sustainability, I was like, how do we make these ingredients really sing? And what we had noticed was that most tea companies were using flavorings or using additives to create herbal infusions, to create teas. And very few people were really doing pure loose leaf tea, just the best quality that you can find, and working directly with the tea estate. So for us, there's no traders, there's no middlemen. We just go directly to either the farming groups for our herbs, or we go to the tea estates for our tea. And that was, I mean, that's still a very unique model. Not many tea companies do that. And then we decided loose leaf for a couple of reasons. I would say, you know, going off of Smita's stories of growing up around tea, I've always experienced in India, when you have tea and you have it like about a dozen times a day, somebody makes it from scratch. You know, it's not this idea of dunking a tea bag into a cup of hot water and adding some milk. It's really made on the stove. You use tea leaves, you use milk, you use water, and you boil it together and you make what's known as Indian chai. So for us, loose leaf tea was not something crazy and foreign. It was something actually quite familial. And so how do we introduce that to an audience that's not as familiar with loose leaf tea? So that was one reason why we wanted to do loose leaf. We just felt like there was so much opportunity there to really get people back to brewing tea. The second was environmental. Incidentally, when we launched the company last fall, there was a BBC story that came out and it talked about microplastics in tea bags. So even tea bags that look like they're paper, they have plastic in them. And therefore, when you put hot water on it, the plastic also unleashes into your tea, which is, you know, obviously not lovely for so many different reasons. You don't want to be consuming it, but also it's just creating more waste. And it's always frustrating. I see when there's like tea bags inside sachets, inside a box, and it's just layers and layers of packaging. So how do we cut back on some of that packaging? And then thirdly, I would say is that, you know, in the U.S., we've seen this real love with coffee. Like, you're a coffee drinker, you love coffee, you might be making a pour over for yourself, you might be taking time to find out the origin of that coffee, and people are now understanding, like, a Costa Rican coffee to a Rwandan coffee to an Ethiopian coffee to a Sumatran coffee, like, they're really celebrating the origins of that coffee. People aren't doing that with tea. I don't know how many people can really name different places that tea is grown and understand the differences between all those varieties of tea. So that's another reason why we decided to go loose leaf, is that when you see on our packaging it says Darjeeling tea, you know it's coming from Darjeeling, India. You see Assam tea, you know it's coming from Assam, India. And we're going to continue to do that as we add more varieties of tea, is to really celebrate the origins of the tea and the stories of those tea estates. So I think that kind of summarizes all the reasons that we decided to do loose leaf. And then it also just helps people slow down and take the time, you know, 10 minutes to brew yourself a proper cup of tea.
And the one other thing I would just follow up, and all of this completely correct, the other thing I would follow up with Asha too is saying that most of the tea bags that we get in our grocery stores have been on the shelves for probably multiple years by the time we get them. And, you know, you open up a tea bag and typically the tea is crushed and it's quite low quality. So we wanted to give folks an offering for loose leaf tea that is much more fresh. We're getting it from our latest harvest and it's not crushed. It's whole tea leaves. So when you brew it, you can actually see the tea leaves unfolding and they bloom while they're in your water. It obviously tastes better and it's much more fresh, but you're also getting all of the nutrients and antioxidants and everything else that's in the tea leaf in a much stronger way.
So interesting. And I feel like when I talk to people here in the States, at least people that I know, it almost feels like they're predominantly, and you correct me if I'm wrong, but they're predominantly shopping for tea based on taste and not necessarily based on the story or the ethics of how the tea was harvested and produced. Is that something that both of you came across in doing research or talking to consumers?
I think so, yeah. I mean, one of the biggest misconceptions around tea is also just what is tea? So I think many people are not aware that, you know, if we think about coffee or if we think about wine, wine is essentially grapes. Yes, there's different varieties of grapes. But with coffee, it's the coffee plant that's grown in different places, but it's fundamentally, right, the same plant. With tea, it's Camellia sinensis, which is the name of the actual tea bush, and it's grown throughout Asia. So, you know, a matcha tea, a oolong tea, a Ceylon tea, which refers to Sri Lanka, and a Darjeeling tea are all the same plant. It's just grown in different altitudes, in different environments, and then processed in different ways. And that's what gives you different flavor profiles. So I think, you know, we did a tea tasting in San Francisco, and we asked some of the guests there that came that first night when we were just testing out this idea, did people know the difference between green tea and black tea and white tea and how they were, you know, given those names? And most people didn't know. They thought they were actually different types of tea, but it's really the same tea leaf that is left out to dry longer or shorter. And that's what gives it a darker, more robust flavor, as you would see with a black tea, or a more delicate floral flavor that you would see with white tea, because it's really that oxidation process that gives you different flavor profiles in tea. And I think one of the other misconceptions around tea, and one of the other things that's still yet to be really discovered around tea, is that we give so much importance in the world of wine to where it's grown, right? It's this whole French concept of terroir, and it's this mixture of the soil and the humidity and the altitude and all of those things that produces a great bottle of wine. It's the same thing with tea. So if you go to Darjeeling, for example, and I keep referring to that as an example because I think it's one of the few places in the world where there's still this sort of incredible magical story around tea. You're at tea estates that are 10,000, 12,000 feet above sea level. They're at the base of the Himalayas. Everything is done by hand. There's no machines that are used. There's women that get up every morning and go out there and pluck tea for 4 or 5 hours a day in the morning. And it's because it's at this altitude, and it's because the tea is plucked by hand, and it's a very delicate tea bush that's growing there, that you have this really distinct flavor. So, for example, this Darjeeling First Flush tea, which is harvested early on in the spring, which would be March, April time, and that has a very light aromatic taste because it's not been on the plant as longer. Then you harvest a second flush, which takes place in the summer in July, August, and because it's been on the plant longer, the leaves develop more flavor and taste and are more robust also, and that has what they call a muscatel flavor. It's a darker, more robust flavor. And even in that region, even though it's within India, people drink that tea without milk. So you will not see chai the way that chai is so popularized throughout the rest of India. So there's just so many like subcultures within the world of tea that I think that, you know, certain communities in the U.S., like definitely the Asian community, whether it's South Asian or East Asian, are familiar with, but I don't know about the broader public. And I think the general feedback has been that there's still so much to explore with that community and how much we can teach our consumers.
Yeah, I think there's this, especially in the U.S., I mean, of course, in Asia, tea culture is huge. Even in the U.K., it's huge. And you know, in South America, it's almost every other country, you have some sort of tea culture. In the U.S., what I found is that you either have folks that are super fancy tea drinkers and spend, you know, $50 a gram of tea for something that is really refined, or you'll have the majority of people that are just satisfied with buying tea bags off of a grocery store shelf and don't really ask more questions. So we're trying to create a little bit of a new market in the middle for people that want to up their quality of the tea that they're drinking, but still have it be in an affordable and accessible price range.
And not too confusing, like not a science. And so that's why we've kept our website like really basic, that we have two kinds of Darjeeling tea. We have one Assam tea, because you can also get really quite nerdy with this. I mean, and so for somebody like me or for Smita who love tea, that might be fascinating, but you know, maybe not for the average tea consumer that just wants to have something that's not caffeinated, but less caffeinated than coffee, because tea does have caffeine. But, you know, so there's just this room that we discovered that we could really explore further and further. And as we're doing it, we're finding that there's so many different aspects to this story to really share. For example, like tea bags also, you know, there's so many different qualities of tea bags. And so, yes, there are some brands that are really going down the road of finding compostable tea bags, which are mostly made of corn-based or plant-based ingredients. But there's still a lot of brands that are just using your Bob standard tea bag, which does have plastic in it. And some of those tea bags also have like fanning, which is what the industry calls it, which is literally the bottom dust of what is harvested. And so it's really cheap. And that's why you can buy 100 tea bags for $2. But is it really going to give you the aroma of the tea plant? No, it's not. It's just going to give you a really dark tea that, you know, probably tastes great with milk and sugar, but it's not celebrating the unique flavor of that tea. So there's so much variety there for us to really explore and share with our consumers.
Okay, all of this is so fascinating. I have one more question on that topic. So I wanna wrap my mind around the type of person that shops in the grocery store for tea versus someone that might shop online for tea. Do you think that the person that is shopping in the grocery store is more concerned about price than someone who would go online and cares a little bit more about the quality. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah.
No, I think that's a really interesting question because people have been kind of accustomed to shopping for tea and coffee at the grocery store. But just like how the coffee industry is pushing people to really find a roaster that they love or find their local coffee brand that they love, I think we're sort of asking consumers to also do the same, is to come to us that's online. That said, we are also in retail locations and on shelves. And it really depends on which retailer you go to. Like some grocery stores have a wonderful selection of teas and there's nothing wrong with picking up a tea there. It's more about how much are you willing to really be flexible on your budget, because a better quality tea will cost you more, for example, than the 100 tea bags for $2.
I think a big part of this is most people just might not even know that another option exists.
Yes.
I mean, I know that, you know, up till the last few years before this, I would shop at a grocery store and pick up tea bags because I just didn't really either think about it, or it wasn't in really like a mainstream media conversation or the cultural, there was no cultural sort of conversation or pressure around tea drinking the same way it is around coffee. So you kind of just, you know, you rely on word of mouth for these kinds of things, which has been really helpful for us, or having a company that you can say, oh, wow, they're actually teaching people about some of the both science and cultural practices around tea bags versus and making it more accessible for people. So we're trying to slowly educate people that, you know, that there is a better option out there, and asking some of those questions about what it is that you're actually drinking. Where is it coming from? Who are the companies behind the products that you're consuming? And hopefully, you know, pushing the conversation forward in this space.
That's actually a great segue to my next question about marketing. So as you know, the Next Big Thing podcast is all about bold brands and smart marketing. What has Alea Tea done to market itself that you think has worked out really well?
Sure. So, you know, I wouldn't say that we've done anything particularly crazy or innovative. I think what has worked really well for us is just going back to the basics and starting off really small. You know, we have found that so many people are actually really disconnected from the food and the beverages they consume. And oftentimes people don't even know, you know, the faces behind like the companies that they buy their food and drinks from, or like I was saying before, where the products come from, or who are the people that are the labor behind the products that you're eating or drinking. And so for us, what we found has been really helpful is actually just doing small events with people. Doing tea tastings. Before we launched, we had a couple of tea tastings, like invited 30 friends of ours over to my house in San Francisco one night, and literally did like an 8-course like tea tasting for them, where we solicited feedback, we made everybody write on post-it notes like what is the feeling that they got when they drank a certain type of tea, and we used a lot of those descriptors in our marketing going forward on our Instagram and some of our the ways that we talk about our tea descriptions and our labels, and did a handful of these events after we launched. So we've done like tastings at different corporate companies and gotten feedback from people there. We've done tastings at local grocery stores. One of our wholesale clients is Hudson Greens, which is a small organic women-owned market up in Napa. So, you know, occasionally we've done tea tastings with people there. And I think one, it's really fun for people to discover, you know, that you're the co-founder of this company and that they can actually meet and have a conversation with somebody that is that they can buy a food product from. But also it's a great way for us to have a little bit of a makeshift focus group, because we got a lot of great feedback and questions from people on, you know, what exactly does Darjeeling mean? Where is this region that this tea is being sourced from? You know, why is loose leaf tea better than tea bags? And incorporate a lot of those questions back into our label and on our website. So it was a combination of those events, and which we are continuing to do in like an online format now is have been helpful in both getting the word out, but also getting a focus group so we can integrate some of that feedback directly back into our packaging.
And I would say that packaging is another thing. I mean, we spend a lot of time on that packaging, and I don't know if that's necessarily innovative in that sense, but, you know, I have to say that one of the things that we both noticed was that if you do go look at the grocery store shelf, a lot of the packaging looks very similar, and it can get confusing and overwhelming. And so we wanted to create something that was like really soothing and relaxing to look at, gave you a sense of being there. So hence the mountains and the tea fields that you see on the front label are meant to kind of transport you to that place. But to create packaging that did stand out. And in the industry that we are in, it is unique. There are only, I would say, a handful of brands that really do have that kind of aesthetic.
Completely. Really nailing packaging is so important.
Yeah. I mean, the packaging also, and Esha can talk about this because she was leading the charge on finding the right packaging for us. But we went through a process where it took us months to find, not only design that label, which we now have since iterated multiple times on, but find the right packaging solution. And we really wanted the packaging to be fully compostable. And that, you know, that was something that was important to us, both from like the values of our company, you know, and having a sustainability focus, but also offering a little bit of a differentiator than what already exists, and making it as easy as possible for people to say, like, hey, you can actually put this entire package in your compost, including the zipper on the bag and the labels on it, as easy as possible. But that took us months to find and figure out.
Yeah, to call like 24 suppliers to try to find anybody that was doing compostable packaging that fit our criteria for a food product. And the reality is there are very few for small businesses that are starting out. In fact, one of them said to me, you know, people typically do this down the road, or they do this, you know, 2-3 years into the business, but they don't start off with these kind of values. And I think that was good feedback for us. So then we knew that we were sticking to our guns, even though it was a bit harder in the beginning.
Yeah, packaging definitely comes up quite a bit on the podcast so far. So when it comes to packaging for the entrepreneurs who are listening to this podcast, do you have any recommendations or hacks for finding a supplier for something like compostable packaging?
I think so. And I think it really depends on the size of the business. So, I mean, this is a self-funded business. We've decided to not raise capital. So that meant that we had a smaller pool of money to play with in the beginning. So we had to be kind of prudent with how much we could really invest in our first run for inventory. And when you have limitations on minimum quantities, that does, you know, rule out some options, because some packaging companies, whether it's the actual packaging that you're buying, it's the, you know, the envelope, the label, the printing, all of that, or it's the actual co-packer that might help you package the product, they all have minimum quantities, right? So I would say that we spent months on this, and this was something that, you know, as we were building this while having full-time jobs, it kind of worked in our favor because we could spend that time doing that, researching, calling multiple people across California to try to find something local so we could have a low carbon footprint. And then, you know, ultimately finding that there were really a handful of people in the United States that were selling compostable packaging in small enough numbers that we could afford it for our first run. And then really asking the questions. I mean, I talked to so many different experts on like, what is compostability? So there's compostability at the home level. You can put it in your compost pile. And then there's compostability at the municipal level, which means that you can take the package and it will be put into a municipal compost that, you know, goes up to a certain heat level. And so the compost happens faster than it would at your home. And then verifying that this packaging is actually doing that, because there's also a fair amount of greenwashing that goes on. So you have to be careful. And then, you know, we learned about labels and we learned about inks and we learned about all these things that we were not experts in. I mean, I, as a background, as a journalist, you know, who had been writing about environmental stuff, had some knowledge of this, but I was certainly not the expert. And that is really a learning curve, and you have to be kind of open to that journey and be willing to do it. But for us, it's a big part of our brand. I mean, our tea is also all organic, biodynamic, and also now working with farms that are regeneratively organic certified, which is a mouthful of jargon, but it's also really important to us because it, you know, continues that story of we're not doing this just to be another tea company, but it's really to support the farmers who are at the grassroots level pushing, you know, the conversation forward on environment, on climate change, mm-hmm. and that is through agriculture. So there's so much more to this than just kind of what meets the eye.
Yeah, I'll also say about the packaging. I mean, we had decided on one packaging option and got the bags in the mail, and we're literally doing our first photo shoot for the product, and we were like, no, we got to find different packaging. Like, we have to find something better because it was a little too flimsy. It didn't look super polished. And, you know, there's of course trade-offs when you're looking for fully compostable packaging in an industry that is still so nascent, that, you know, we're constantly making. But we decided after that first photo shoot, actually, we're going to go with a different supplier, and ended up being really happy about the packages that we have now. But even then, you know, there are still trade-offs, which is sometimes, you know, the one out of 1,000 packages or the zipper, which is fully compostable, may like come apart a little bit. And then we'll have to explain to our customers, like, yes, this is compostable. It may not be, you know, the same airtight expectation that you would have from a plastic packaging, but this is the trade-off that you're making, and these are the reasons why we thought it was a better decision. So it definitely was a bit of a journey in figuring that out, but I'm excited and happy about where we ended up in.
That's awesome. I know someone is listening to this podcast and they're grateful for everything that you just talked about, even just to feel like maybe they have some camaraderie in this space. I know you touched on being both retail and e-com focused, which is unique in this space compared to other entrepreneurs that I've spoken with. Where do you see Alea focusing in the future?
Yeah, so we are primarily are focused on direct-to-consumer. It makes sense for our business for multiple reasons. One is that we source directly all of our tea directly from India and don't have any middlemen or brokers or traders or anybody in between. So it kind of, you know, it makes sense for us because we're sourcing it directly and then we're directly selling it for most of the time. We do have a small percentage of our business dedicated to wholesale customers. And these are either local markets or companies that are mission driven and we feel very aligned with in terms of our values. So Alea is sold on a few different platforms and places. We're on The Helm, which is a women-founded platform that sells only female-founded products.
Love them, by the way.
Yeah, they're awesome. We also recently started being sold in Tare, which is this bulk package-free grocery store, which just opened up recently in Highland Park in East LA. And then we also offer our teas in Narrative Foods, which is this organic women-owned food delivery subscription service in the larger Los Angeles region, and have a few other customers across the country, but are really primarily being focused on direct-to-consumer and online.
Cool. So you launched in August of last year. What do you wish that you knew before launching?
So many things.
where do we begin?
Actually, I don't know if you feel this way, but sometimes it's easier to do something when you don't know a ton about the details, right? Like,
yeah.
We didn't really know anything of the packaging, so we didn't really know how hard it was. I'm sure we would have still done this if we knew how hard most of these things were, but it does allow for a different level of fearlessness when you're going into something and you're outside of the industry. I would say for me, I think, you know, we were such perfectionists in the beginning with the design of our label. Like, I wish that we would have maybe pushed that out earlier, because we just learned so much from just being out in the world and did a first run of labels and then learned a lot from there, and now are continuing to switch around the design and what we're writing about it and all this kind of stuff. So that is one thing. And then the other thing, which I think makes our dynamic or our company a little bit more unique, is that Esha and I, even though we had known each other for 7 years and we're friends, we had never worked together. So it definitely was something that, you know, I feel like sometimes we like jumped into the marriage and had kids before we dated. I think that like it took us some time to figure out like how to work together. We both have full-time jobs. Like, how do we negotiate both of our schedules? How do we resolve conflict together? How do we give feedback? How do both people receive and take feedback? So this kind of thing. Esha, what about you? What do you feel like you wish you knew?
I think, you know, many entrepreneurs say this, and as a journalist, I've interviewed many entrepreneurs, but I think it's really true, is that we all sort of crib about the details and try to get something perfect before we launch it, but you really should just jump in. And I think, obviously, aside from cracking a few supply chain issues with packaging and all of that, we have a lot of it figured out for quite a while, and we sat on it because of small details, whether it was design work or something else. And I think sometimes it's perfectly fine to just jump in with a slightly less than perfect product, but just to start to test the waters. The other thing I would say is also just don't be scared to ask for help. Both of us know some lovely women, we know entrepreneurs, and I think there is a hesitancy sometimes to ask somebody for a favor and to ask them like, hey, can you advise me on this? I don't know what to do about this. How do I get a UPC code, or how do I, you know, figure out this thing for tax or whatever? But just really basic business questions is like, don't feel intimidated or don't feel scared to ask people around you that might know the answer. It's not going to make you look silly or stupid. Just, you know, be open with the journey and be open to the fact that there are going to be things you don't know the answers to, and that's perfectly fine. So I think everything that Smita said plus those two things.
Got it. And one of my goals on this podcast is for us to really be transparent with listeners. So I just want to be clear, both of you are still working your full-time jobs. Is that correct?
Yes. Yep. We joke that, we're not sure which one takes more time. I mean, when you launch something that's your own, it's like you can't ever stop thinking about it. I've been working at Google X, the experimental labs of Google on climate change and other social impact projects for the last 4 years, and they're super supportive of launching my own company and I brought in tea to my colleagues, and I've worked in India actually a lot the last few years before, so managed to collide some of those worlds. But it's definitely a negotiation with how you split up your day and being really disciplined about, you know, dedicating certain hours in your day to your day job and then dedicating certain hours at night to Alea. So I found that being flexible when I have to and also like being disciplined when I need to, is both of those things have been really helpful to balance that.
Yeah, I think it's really discipline. It's really discipline. It's really, you have to be willing to put in the long hours that's required. There are nights that we tend to get on calls late at night. There are weekends that we do work. And, you know, it's not something that we want to do obviously permanently forever, but it is a compromise that you make, and it's also a choice that we made to not take on investment. So for us, it was also financially, we have to support ourselves while we build this. We feel more comfortable with that because it gives us more ownership of the company and to really build a brand that we believe in without having to, have to deal with investors. So there's compromises, and you have to be aware of those compromises. But honestly, for me, the creative elements of Alea have been such a nice outlet and so different from what I do all day, which is, you know, writing work, whether it's journalistic work or it's editorial content for brands. But it's nice to do something different. And if you enjoy it and it doesn't feel too taxing, then you're probably on the right journey, is what I would say.
Yeah, I can absolutely relate to that. Sometimes I feel like I can't even sleep at night because I'm so excited about doing my own thing. It's exhilarating. I want to pivot to discuss something that is clearly on everyone's minds, and that is COVID. How has Alea been affected as a result of COVID?
So the good news for us is food is something that people rely on even in the toughest of times. And tea is something that, you know, obviously brings people some calmness and some quiet and some solace. And so I think we've been in a lucky position that we still have a product that's relatively affordable and accessible. The other thing is also that because we're a lean operation and it's just primarily the two of us that are doing it, not something that we have to worry about overheads or, you know, excess financial costs. So that's been really good for us from a business perspective. And then from the perspective of the industry, for the tea industry, what was more concerning for us was that, you know, everybody's dealing with supply chain issues and would we be affected as well? Because we try to get the harvest that's the freshest, and we want to only supply the stuff that's really just been recently harvested. We, you know, don't get large batches of tea and store it for years and years. So we depend on those supply chains to work pretty quickly and in a nimble way. So when COVID hit India in March, and it was towards the end of March, I believe, when they went into lockdown, we were concerned as to what that would mean for the industry. And luckily, they were asked to not go into the fields for a little while, but then we were able to resume work. A few weeks later, they were able to make the argument that, you know, the pickers can work safely and with all the precautions and still continue to harvest the crops. Because really, for the industry, that would have been devastating. March, April is such an important time for the industry to be harvesting. It's when a lot of the tea leaves are coming into bloom. The Darjeeling First Blush tea is the most expensive tea, and for them to lose out on that would have been pretty devastating for those tea estates. So they were able to resume work. And yes, there's been obviously some losses in terms of the amount that they've been able to harvest, but it's not destroyed, you know, 2020 results or 2020 harvest yields. And that's good news. So things are kind of moving along as safely and as normally as they can in India, as well as India rides out the pandemic too.
Wow, so happy and grateful that your business is not as impacted by COVID, because I know a lot of other entrepreneurs cannot say the same. On another positive note, I'm going to bank on the fact that we have a lot of people listening who drink kombucha. So the latest addition to the Alea Tea family is a big one, because I know a lot of people are going to want to start trying to make kombucha at home. Can you talk more about this kombucha kit that your team has launched recently?
Sure. So the kombucha really came to us in the last couple months because, one, I've been brewing kombucha at home for a long time now. But we wanted to make a kit that was eco-friendly, and that was something we noticed that was not as widely available in the market. So again, we went on that journey of like finding compostable packaging and thinking about every aspect of the kit. And the kit that we've ended up with is, you know, pretty much the entire thing is compostable except for one wrapper, which is what the SCOBY is housed in, and that has to be plastic for safety reasons so that the liquid doesn't come out. But that's recyclable. So we have just launched this kombucha kit, and, you know, we thought that it would be a great addition to celebrate our tea, because we sell a black tea, Assam tea, which is perfect for brewing kombucha. So you get a whole packet of tea as well, which is really nice. It distinguishes us from many of the other kits that oftentimes you will just get a small amount of tea that's enough to brew, you know, 1 gallon or 2 gallons of tea. With ours, you get like a whole packet of tea, so you can make dozens of gallons of kombucha with it. And it's a great activity to do when you're, you know, at home and you've got kids, and it's a wonderful science experiment that you can teach the kids about fermentation. And then it's also just something that reiterates what the brand stands for, which is like cutting down on waste. You know, every time we go to the store and we buy kombucha bottles, it can be wasteful. And so it's something that's so easy to brew at home, and you can have an endless supply. And so why not do that? And so we just thought that that would be a fun product for the summer, and we're excited to have it out there.
Okay, I love that. What a cute idea to have in the summertime and to also have with families. I can imagine kids would go crazy over a kombucha kit, and it would be a fun little science experiment. So with this kit and everything that we've talked about today, you really have me thinking. I go to the grocery store and I usually purchase a single kombucha to go for the car. It's typically a impulse purchase, but it does contribute to a lot of waste. And that's not really something that I ever thought about before.
I think there's also this trend towards self-sufficiency, which I've been seeing a lot in my own circles, and people, you know, because of the pandemic and not being able to do your normal activities or go to restaurants or, you know, get somebody to fix your microwave or whatever else, people are learning how to do a lot of these things themselves. And I was reading that, you know, Google trends for or searches for, you know, DIY everything, including fixing your own appliances, have gone up, and most people are saying that, like, this might actually be something, a trend that will continue on even after the pandemic is done, because now that people are learning how to make, you know, everything from their own kombucha to bread, it feels like, you know, why would you go back now that you know how to do it? So we'll see. Hopefully it's something that people will continue to do even after this phase is passed.
I can absolutely relate to that. I bought a toolkit and I have no idea what I'm doing, but I feel like I should have it just in case I want to do some kind of side project. So let's talk about where listeners can find Alea Tea.
So like we said, you know, primarily online, our website is aleatea.co. And we're on the Helm, which we mentioned earlier, and a handful of other small grocery stores. If you're in Brooklyn, we're in a small grocery store called Depanour. In the LA region, at Narrative Foods or at Tare, and then up in the Bay Area at Hudson Greens in Napa. But, you know, we're excited to keep educating people on how to make loose leaf tea and transitioning folks over from tea bags to higher quality, fresher loose leaf tea. We're going to have a couple of new blends and unique varieties that are going to come out probably later this summer, which we're super excited about. So keep an eye out for that and sign up for our newsletter, which you can find on our website. And then, like I mentioned earlier, we're also going to be doing a few virtual tea tastings in August. So if you sign up for our newsletter online, we'll let you know how you can join on those.
I'm so doing that. It's like 1 year celebration, right?
True. Yeah. Maybe we should do it for our 1 year anniversary.
Yeah. I love that. That'd be so fun.
Yeah.
Okay. So what if someone were to buy Alea Tea online? What is like the gateway tea that everyone raves about?
So our chamomile flowers have been super popular, and that was an unfair answer because we just got sold out. We just sold out of our chamomile flowers last week. So stay tuned for when those are going to be back online, hopefully in the next few months. But I would say our Assam black tea and ginger has been super popular because it's the basis for making chai, and you can experiment with doing it with or without milk or sugar or without. And then a lot of people have been buying our fresh mint because you could make a really good iced mint tea with it. And it's really refreshing. I'm biased to those, and those are my favorite, and also what I found to be pretty popular. Esha, do you have a favorite? Is that a fair question to ask?
I think, I think those are definitely Assam black and ginger is a great one to start with, especially if you do like chai and you want to do this kind of a simplified version of that. It's very similar to what we grew up drinking in India as chai. It's often just black tea and ginger or just black tea and one spice. So it's a little bit more authentic to us than the chai that you get at the big box cafes. But I think the Darjeeling pack that we have is also a lovely gift, but it's also a lovely set of tea to start with if you want to try something a little bit different. Darjeeling tea, for those who haven't tasted it, is a very different taste from black tea. Even though the Darjeeling tea is black and it does have caffeine, it's a much more delicate flavor. And then we also have a Darjeeling green tea. So if you want something a little slightly less caffeine, we also have that. And I think that's a lovely new tea to discover in the summer. And all of them taste lovely iced. So if you're not into hot tea in the summer, I hear you. It's like 100 degrees in LA. So, you know, have some iced tea.
Ooh, I'm going to go make some tea right now. That sounds so amazing. Keep in mind, for those of you who are listening, to go sign up for the Alea Tea newsletter. I'll make sure to include the link in the show notes so that you can stay on top of the products when they get restocked. And I just want to give a special thank you to Smita and Esha for telling your story today on the Next Big Thing podcast. It was amazing to have you on as guests this week.
Thanks so much. Happy to be on.
Today's episode really opened my eyes. What Smita and Esha are working on is truly something special. They're not only bringing the culture of tea to the United States and celebrating that, but they are also taking extra care to help you understand and appreciate where quality tea comes from. If you had a light bulb moment like I did, or many light bulb moments during this episode, tag us on Instagram at the Next Big Thing Pod, and we would love to reshare on our feed. And on that note, two special announcements. So the first announcement is really exciting, and I hope our listeners take advantage of this one. Alea Tea has generously given listeners of the Next Big Thing podcast 15% off their kombucha kit purchase, which is awesome. Thank you, Alea Tea, for being so generous. If you want to take advantage of this offer, which I can't see how you wouldn't, head to their website at aleatea.co. I will leave the link in the show notes. And the code for 15% off your kombucha kit is TNBT15, the number 15. Thank you again, Smita and Esha. We appreciate it. And my other announcement. So to celebrate the success of this podcast, for the first 25 people who write us a review, screenshot it, and send us an email at pod@onceandmore.co, that's onceandmore.co. For those of you who leave us a review, we want to send you a special little thank you. And no, it's not a freebie. It's just a cup of tea on us. Ratings and reviews help us tremendously, especially because we're a new podcast. So anything that you can do to help elevate our podcast and get it in front of more people who care about female founders or want to start their own business, it means the world to us. Don't forget to check out the show notes, and thank you so much again for listening. I'll catch you in next week's episode.